Radio Boston, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The Federal Reserve usually only gets headlines for its Delphic-like prognostications on the economy and periodic decisions about interest rates handed down from Washington.
Or more recently, when libertarian politicians called for an audit of its resources.
But the central bank of the U.S. is more than just boardrooms inside the Beltway.
This winter, the Boston branch of the Fed announced it's making a move into social activism. It's administering grants to six distressed cities in Massachusetts to try to help them get back on track. The program is called the Working Cities Challenge. And with me now in the studio to talk about it is Eric Rosengren. He's president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. And Eric, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
And before we talk specifically about this program, I feel like the best way to lay the groundwork for why the Fed is doing this may be to first get your take on the economy, because you've been a key and sometimes a lone dissenter among Fed policymakers when it comes to tapering its stimulus policy. You've argued that it's premature to let up too much on things like bond buying, that the stimulus is still necessary and appropriate. So give us a sense of how that indicates you think of the economy. Do you view the strengthening of the economy as very fragile still?
So the economy still is improving, only slowly. So the good news is it's still improving. The bad news is it's still slowly. So the unemployment rate has come down. The last employment report, it was at 6.6%. That's much lower than it was at the worst of the recession, which was 10%. But it's still very gradual, and particularly if you think about broader measures of underutilization of labor, like people that are part-time but want to be full-time, or if you think of people that have pulled out of the workforce, the unemployment number isn't the sole statistic you want to focus on in terms of how well the economy is doing.
And are you concerned that if the stimulus slows or if the stimulus is tapered off too quickly, that just lengthens the time it will take for the economy to get to the recovery point you want it to get at?
So part of my concern would be that inflation's still low and we should try to get to full employment as quickly as possible. And one way to do that is to have an accommodative monetary policy.
You've also, to give us a sense of what worries you most, is it the long-term unemployment problem, and the longer people are out of work, the more their skills erode, the more their psyches erode a little bit?
So you become very concerned about people that have been out of the labor force for a long period of time. So it has it's a harsh reality for anybody who goes through a spell of unemployment, but it does tend to have longer-term effects as well, so that people who've been out of the workforce for a long period of time have difficulty getting reintegrated into the workforce, and that can have other social problems and family problems associated with it.
And as the tapering continues, the tapering of the stimulus, how do you see that affecting New England? Are you concerned it could affect us in negative ways?
So the reason we're removing some of the accommodation is because there has been an improvement in the economy. The economy grew pretty strongly in the second half of the year, so we grew faster than 3%. That's much faster than we had been growing in the previous part of this recovery. Hopefully that continues into next year. Most forecasts are that we'll grow around 3% in 2014. But until we start actually seeing it in the data, I would have preferred to wait a little bit before removing some of that accommodation.
Because you've said that there are costs to a slow recovery. And what do you think those costs are?
The costs are people that are unemployed or underutilized in the labor force that could be in more meaningful jobs is a big loss to the economy overall and a big loss to those individuals.
So if we go to this Working Cities Challenge, this is a case where I think it's $1.8 million in grants will be divided among six communities. Where does the grant money come from?
So the grant money comes, it's a rather unusual, it doesn't come from the Federal Reserve, so let me start with that. What we've tried to do is we're serving as a convener. We're trying to work with a number of different groups. So some of the money is coming from the state of Massachusetts. Some of the money is coming from large employers with a group called the Mass Competitive Partnership. And some of it's coming from a foundation, Living Cities, and other foundations that are starting to refocus some of their work on some of these mid-sized cities. Many of the foundations have been focused on large cities like Detroit that have been having difficulties, but we've been arguing that actually their money may be better spent focusing on some of these mid-sized cities where I think there's some very good stories in some of these cities.
And the cities in Massachusetts that will get the money are Lawrence, Fitchburg, Holyoke, Chelsea, Somerville, Salem, cities that for many people conjure images of these gateway cities, much higher unemployment rates than in many other parts of the state. Much money has been poured into these communities already. How do you see this infusion of money being different?
So one of the ideas behind the Working Cities competition is that we want a collaborative effort. So it's a little bit unusual for the Federal Reserve to be involved with these other organizations as a funder. Well, we want the cities to do the same thing at a lower level, which is to try to bring the nonprofit sector together with businesses and the local mayor or town manager to work. And a lot of the problems in these cities are not a problem with money not getting into the cities. It's that it's not being used as effectively as possible. So we designed this competition to be focused on cities that had higher poverty rates, had low average income relative to the national average, but nonetheless had proposals that could change that. And the goal was to get that infrastructure together, so it's not really brick-and-mortar investments that we're focused on. It's not enough money for brick-and-mortar investments. It really was getting at kind of the soft connective tissue that frequently isn't in all these cities and trying to promote that.
So what's an example of that? Has a proposal come forth that gets you excited about what could be possible with that money?
So there are a number of, I think, very exciting proposals that we saw in this competition. And I would highlight that there's some very good leadership occurring in what we're calling the working cities. So Lawrence is the city that won $700,000.
It was the
largest amount of the various working cities. And they've had a number of problems in the past. They had some problems with corruption in the city. They've had some problems with the school system.
Which are in receivership. Sure.
Exactly. So the fact that they had a proposal that actually got sponsored by the Federal Reserve, I think, is a sign that there's a real resurgence in that city. They have a new mayor. The school system is turning around. They have some very strong nonprofit organizations. They have an active engagement by the business community. What they're focused on is using the schools for more than just the education of the students. So one of the reasons for why students have difficulties is not just because of their own performance, because of things going on in their lives. Their families are having difficulties. A parent loses their job. Abusive situations. So the thought was that as they're refurbishing and rethinking what they're doing in the school system, to think of it more holistically than just the students. So people drop their kids off and pick their kids up. That's also an opportunity to get other social services to that same family. So instead of just thinking about the student as an individual, think about the family unit and how you can use the school system to actually leverage social services in that community.
And tell us where the grant money comes in. Will it be used to create new social services or fund some existing social service systems?
So they're still working. They just got the money. So mm-hmm. I think it's a little premature to know exactly how it's going to be spent. But their proposal is looking at how to integrate with the school system and with the nonprofit organizations that have been very active in the city of Lawrence to try to make sure that these services are much more effectively delivered, and using the school system as part of that delivery mechanism.
And Eric Rosengren, you yourself said that with this kind of money, which is relatively small money, you can't do sort of brick-and-mortar type projects. So Salem and Somerville, for example, I think each get $100,000. What can they accomplish with $100,000?
Well, the hope is that by one of the advantages of this competition is it's development dollars that are merit-based. And so we looked at the best ideas. It wasn't just the cities with the greatest need. So all these cities are cities that have some need, but we wanted to make sure that they had an idea that could be leveraged in a way that would generate a bigger outcome than if we had given it to all cities regardless of the merit of their proposal. So $100,000 by itself won't do that much. The hope is that other funders will see that it was a merit-based competition and they'll decide to potentially contribute, that some of the businesses in that community will step up. And part of it is to use it as incentive money to get the community to work together a little bit more. And I'd say the private sector is the part of the community that tends not to be brought together. The nonprofit sector frequently works with the local government. Frequently, they don't include the businesses in that community. This is desire to get all those three groups together. So it's not just one or the other.
And as you mentioned, it's early on. But for example, in Salem and Somerville, do they make specific proposals that they plan to put that money into effect into pretty quickly?
Yeah, so using Salem as an example, they have a very specific proposal looking at part of the community that have very high percentage of Latinos. And by and large, Salem had not focused on the Latino community that was living in this area. And so they're looking at ways that they can develop that area in a significant way. And so they're going to be using it for studies of how they could develop that community and how to get city services. A lot of city services are not in Spanish language. for example. So they're much more attuned to how they can make sure that they can serve the underserved in their community.
We only have a short amount of time left, but I just want to ask you one more question, which is that one of the sort of nonprofits you're working with has described you as someone who is willing to take risks and make the Fed a more activist organization. Do you view that as what you're doing?
I think this is a little uncharacteristic for the Federal Reserve, but I think it's an exciting opportunity to us to get out into the community and for the community to benefit.
That's Eric Rosengren. He's the president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. He's been telling us about the Working Cities Challenge grant competition that the Fed has created. Eric, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having me.
And stay with us. Coming up, one more thing from BJ Novak. He grew up in Newton, wrote and acted in the hit show The Office. Now he has a new book of funny stories and essays. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.